CV Focus is brought to you by Total Care, the UK experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Visit totalcare.co.uk and learn about their market-leading mobile column lifts, fixed post lifts, brake testers, inspection pits, and more. Total Care, lifting business one vehicle at a time.
So hello and welcome to this week's CV Focus podcast for the ITTHub.net. A very interesting topic of conversation this week. With the introduction of EVs moving at a pace, it seems that hardly a day goes by that a particular manufacturer doesn't announce the launch of a new vehicle or an upgrade of a vehicle that are all EV-based. And that can be passenger car, it can be van, it can be truck, or it can be bus and coach. And obviously, bearing in mind that we're working towards a 2030 deadline with all this, you know, the news is changing daily. But I suppose the burning question is, you know, where are we going to get all this electricity from? And how can, you know, how can we get supply into our places of work? How do we get it into the vehicles? And in the fullness of time, it's going to be millions of vehicles. So, I mean, I suppose who's better to answer this question than Russell Fowler, who's the senior project manager for National Grid, and who's happy enough to chat about the, you know, their involvement in this whole process. Hi, Russell, how are you doing?
Hi, Matt. I'm really good, thank you. Yes, thanks for that introduction. Yeah, I'm really happy to talk about everything about EVs and beyond today.
Excellent. Listen, let's just take it one step back. I mean, we all know about, we've all heard and are familiar with the term National Grid. But what is it? What does it do for us before we even start talking about vehicles?
That's always a great place. So you're right, loads of people have heard of National Grid or the National Grid. But what are we really? So we're a couple of things. So we own what we like to call the kind of the motorways, if you like, of the electricity system. So these are the big pylons you kind of see, maybe even when you drive along the motorway, ironically. So these big pylons, and they take power from big power stations. So whether that's a big offshore wind or a nuclear power station or whatever, and they kind of deliver it around the country. Then they take it down into the local grid, into your home. So it's probably easy to say sometimes what we're not. So we don't deliver power to your home. We don't own power stations. So we move that electricity from the power stations into that kind of local grid, if you like, when it then moves to your home. So we think of us as like the motorways of the electricity system.
Yeah. So now we've got a starting point for this now. Now, let's sort of focus on the sort of vehicle element of this. I mean, we've heard the date 2030. Being bandied around, and it seems to all of a sudden now, with a lot of movement towards being able to deliver a sustainable vehicles, net zero vehicles by that date. But can you, just for the listeners, can you just explain in very, very basic terms what that actually means to us?
Yeah, no, you would have heard a lot of 2030, kind of end of last year, Boris Johnson, big speech, 10-point plan. One of those 10-point plans was the banning of the sale of petrol and diesel cars by 2030. So basically from 2030, you can only buy a zero emission car. Practically that's an electric car. So if you think about it, that's only 9 years away. So from now to 9 years, we need to prepare for all new cars. So not existing cars, just new cars to be electric. So that's a real big change. If you think about the number of cars bought and sold each year, that's kind of a really big change there. And obviously what that does for us, it kind of shifts everything away from fossil fuels, where cars have traditionally been, onto the electricity system. So that's why you may think, well, why National Grid interested in that? You're not into cars, you're into electricity. That's why we're really interested in this. You see this big shift to electric vehicles. And now you've got a date there, you're going to see a big ramp up. You mentioned millions of vehicles. I think forecasts, lots of people put forecasts out there, but you could see around kind of 10, 11, 12 million electric cars on the road by 2030. So kind of big numbers we're talking about here.
That's amazing. And obviously, I suppose more in line with our industry, what does it mean for commercial vehicles? I'm talking vans, I'm talking trucks, I'm talking bus and coach. What does that mean?
Yeah. That's interesting. So the ban I'm talking about here is kind of on the light end of it. So if you've got a car, a passenger car, or a kind of light van, then that affects you. So as you kind of move up the weight divisions, as you move up the kind of the size of the vehicle, that legislation won't affect you. So you'll still be able to get a petrol or diesel big truck, if you like. But that legislation is coming. So we think sometime this spring, you could see a consultation out there, and when do you want to have the same kind of date to ban the sale of diesel trucks. When is that going to be? Now, a lot of speculation around the date. A lot of people suggest 2040 could be a potential date, but it could be even potentially before that as well. So you could have a similar date. So you almost like a staggered system. So as your vehicle gets bigger, if you like, the date where you kind of have to shift to electric or a hydrogen vehicle or whatever it may be kind of gets a little bit later there. But that pathway that we're on, if you like, towards full, I'm going to use the phrase net zero. So net zero is our goal by 2050, where we want to eliminate all of our carbon emissions. And that's the kind of journey or the pathway, if you like, the transport needs to go in. So cars, vans first, then you're going to have bigger, heavier trucks as you get closer to that 2050 deadline there. So it's really important that we prepare for that.
Yeah, so I'm going to say you've taken the words out of my mouth, because obviously you've got to future-proof the infrastructure that you're putting into place. And yeah. I suppose really you get one chance at it now, because you've got to do a lot of, I suppose, crystal ball gazing into what you think the government's aspirations are going to be or requirements are going to be and get it right. Because once you've done it once, you can't really go back and redo it, can you?
And that's a really good point. We have not quite sort of a motto, but certainly a phrase that we kind of use. It's do it once and do it right. So if you've got to put infrastructure in to support this. So if we think about what that looks like, if you've got lots of electric vehicles out there, they're going to want charging, right? Lots of people are going to charge at home, which is absolutely fantastic. I have an EV, I charge at home, really brilliant. But there's times when you're out and about and going on long journeys, and that's a bit difficult at the moment, but let's imagine a time when you can go, you're allowed to go on long journeys again. You're going to want to see that that infrastructure across the motorway network. You're going to want to see that at your destination. So if you go to the supermarket, you can see chargers there. So it's about getting that infrastructure rolled out. And if you want to see that, you kind of want to see that once. You don't want someone to kind of dig up the road, then dig up the road again, because that's really frustrating people. And it's really inefficient if you think of kind of deploying infrastructure. You want to do it once and you want to do it right. So we have these kind of two things that you want to do. So you want to deploy it quickly because you see electric vehicles coming. We've talked about the millions that you could see by 2030, but you also got to make sure it's looking beyond that date so you can get ready for all that kind of electrification that's coming. So that's a bit of the challenge there that you touched on.
Can you keep up with it, Russell? Because, I mean, as I said in the introduction, I mentioned, I mean, obviously, we run a media business, and we see every day, as I mentioned in the intro, either particular, whether it be van, car, truck, bus, coach, manufacturers updating, new product here, new product there. You know, we see the sales of these vehicles ramping up really, really quickly. Are you sort of on task to be able to supply that demand now?
Yeah, so that's a good thing. You say interesting, supply it now, because one thing that happens to this structure, all these cars aren't going to appear at once. They're gonna kind of come in over time. Mm-hmm. And what we've been at National Grid and other networks and other energy companies, they've been looking at this uptake of electric vehicle for kind of almost probably more than a decade now. So you have people that they look at, say, well, what are the various trends in there? So you see the trends of electric vehicles. And then you kind of build that into your forecast, and you take that forecast and then you kind of plan your network around that. So for more than 10 years, people have been planning the uptake of electric vehicles and what that means for the energy networks. Absolutely, people have been thinking about this for a decade or so now. And if you kind of look on the other side of it, I'm maybe going to preempt another question that you may have said, well, where's all the electricity going to come from? You often hear a lot of it in the media saying, well, how are we going to manage this? Where's the electricity going to come from as well? So I'm going to give a few numbers, and then hopefully I'll put a bit of context around them and then explain them a little bit, if that's okay. So
no, brilliant.
So if you look at, if you were to electrify cars, that's going to generate around 100 terawatt hours of demand. So you need 100 terawatt hours of electricity to do that. Now let's put that in context. Now, the UK today uses around 300 terawatt hours in total for everything that we do. So you've got the 300 that we do today, plus this extra 100 if you need from transport. Now bear in mind that 100, you think that sounds like a big number, but bear in mind how much energy now you're not using of petrol and diesel. So the actual energy that the country uses has kind of reduced quite a lot, because as you know, electric engines are far more efficient than petrol and diesel engines, which is great for an overall efficiency, great for overall carbon, great for air quality, all those things that we know EVs are really good for. But your question is, how are you going to get that 100? So the way that we think about the energy system is you don't think about it, just you don't slice it up into kind of compartments, if you like. So when you generate electricity, when power stations generate there, as much as they say they are, they're not generating an electron just for you. They can't say this electron is going to go into your car. So it all goes into the grid and then it all gets kind of moved out. So what's important is that you have demand and supply being matched. So that's the thing that you've got to get in there. So you've got two things there. So you've got the demand from electric vehicles, which is going up. It's going to get to this around 100 by 2030, 2035, when you've got the full rollout of electric vehicles. And you've got this kind of 300, which is a kind of electricity that we use for everything else. So for lights, TVs, computers, bits and pieces. That's generally on a bit of a downward trend because of energy efficiency. So I don't know if your home, you've got there, if you've got LED bulbs or you've got a laptop or an iPad, something a lot more efficient. I don't know how long you've been around for, Mike, but if you remember big desktop computers, those huge things with a kind of fan, you could kind of fry an egg on the back of them. Think of how much more efficient that has got there in appliances. So you've got a little bit of a decrease there. So when you put those two things together, you don't have to find necessarily an extra 100 terawatt hours, but you do certainly have to find more power. And I'm going to jump back. Back to Boris Johnson, and one of his 10-point plans was lots of offshore wind, and he wanted to get 40 gigawatts of offshore wind. Now, by a good coincidence, that generates around 100 terawatt hours, if you kind of work it out. I don't think it was designed like that. It's just a really good coincidence. So the ambition we have for renewable electricity matches the ambition we have, if you like, for electric cars. So that's where you're going to get the energy from. And then it's really important that you manage that energy. So this is about smart charging. So charging your car up overnight when electricity is cheap, or charging up when it's windy or when the sun shines as well. So that's when all that smart technology makes all these bits and pieces coming together. It's that kind of digital economy kind of making all these bits and pieces work together. So that's a bit of an overview. I hope that hasn't gone too much into that, but that's kind of how we see it in a bit of a nutshell there.
No, and going on to, I suppose, bigger vehicles, well, and I know we're saying it's a little bit uncertain exactly when that drop dead date is going to be, but what would your forecast be for powering when we're looking at trucks? You know, it's probably going to start, I think it's probably going to start with regional distribution and then sort of gradually work up the food chain, the weight chain from there. But I mean, what do you think the ultimate demand is going to be for that, Russell? It must be massive.
I mean, this is an interesting one. So when we talk about cars, we always talk about electric cars. No one really talks about kind of other fuel trucks. But when you talk about trucks, there's a little bit more of a discussion still to be had there. What is my truck going to look like in the future? Is it going to be a battery electric truck? The Tesla Semi is a good one, but obviously lots of other manufacturers out there. Or is it going to be a hydrogen truck? Am I going to put hydrogen into my truck and it's going to run a hydrogen fuel cell? There's even the possibility, this is quite popular on the continent, we have like an overhead system where your truck has like a catenary line and it goes a little bit like on the rail network. If you go to Germany, this is very popular there. This is the way that they think they're going to get their truck. So whereas when we look at cars, you go, absolutely, it's an electric car and that's what happened at the moment. When you look into the world of trucks, it's not quite there. There's still a little bit of a, well, what is that technology behind? Do I need to produce hydrogen or do I need to produce electricity? So that's why when we look at that date, that's why people are thinking of a 2040 date rather than a 2030 date, because you really need that technology to catch up. But the interesting thing from our point of view is, if you look at those solutions, so if you look at the battery electric or you look at the kind of the overhead, obviously they run on electricity. So you're going to need the electricity grid there. But if you say, well, what about hydrogen? Where are we going to get that from? And at the moment, most hydrogen is produced from kind of renewable electricity. So you use renewable electricity and you take water and you kind of split it apart, hydrogen, oxygen, and then you keep the hydrogen and then you put the hydrogen in the fuel cell. Now, in the future, you may be able to get hydrogen by taking the hydrogen out of natural gas, but then you've got to capture the carbon. So people often talk about carbon capture and storage. So that technology may be a number of years in the future. But if you're looking at something that you're going to do relatively soon, you've kind of got a battery truck, a kind of an overhead truck or a hydrogen truck. All of those kind of need electricity. So when you come back to it, you need an electricity system to support that. And that comes back to the point, I think you touched on it really early. You said, make sure it's future-proof. Absolutely. So when you're putting this infrastructure in for cars, let's make sure that we can put it in for trucks as well, because whatever solution that they end up on, and it could be a mixture, right? So some companies could want electric trucks and some could want hydrogen trucks, depending on their needs, for example, whether you're going long distances or, as you said, if you're just doing that shorter distribution. But you've got to need the electricity system there. So that's really our ask. Make sure that infrastructure is in there and future-proofed and ready to go. So when you put the connections in, say, at the motorway service area, it's then ready in 5-10 years when the trucks come along as well. You don't have to kind of dig the site up again there. So that's kind of where we see that going. But there is certainly a bit more uncertainty on the truck and kind of land what that technology is. I think that's where we kind of look a little bit to the government, and we're thinking they're going to publish what they call the Transport Decarbonisation Plan. So this is a big document that they've it's got to set out a little bit of a vision, if you like, for kind of all forms of transport and what that's going to look like. So there could be some steers coming up over the next kind of 6 months or so about what that direction looks like for trucks.
I'll tell you what, Russell, what we found out over the sort of the previous podcast, particularly when we're focusing on the EV side of it, is that it's not just, and this is where the industry's got to change, where the industry's got to evolve about, you know, acquiring vehicles. It's a whole package, isn't it? It's not just the vehicle. It's making sure you've got the right type, how close you are to the grid, making sure that the property that you've got, it can accommodate. It's probably going to lead to decisions to be made. Well, hang on a minute. We really want, because we're involved in sort of regional delivery, local delivery, we need a site that's close to it and has got the right network capability, you know, a grid capability to be able to deal with that.
I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there. Lots of different companies and organisations are going to have lots of different needs. So people we talk to, there are people, you mentioned that kind of distribution model. They will leave like a home depot somewhere, and then their vehicles will all go out, and then they'll come back again at the end of the night. Yeah. So what you need there is like a big hub where you can kind of charge all these vehicles. They don't need to do anything on the road because they go out full. They do their journey, stop, start, and then they come back again. So you're absolutely right. That site needs to be ready to have an electricity supply to do it. So that's either reinforcement in there, so getting new network in there, or is there an opportunity to think, do you know what, maybe do we need to relocate our site? So if you were thinking of a relocation anyway, does that then become a factor in your business plan? Not necessarily a location on like the road network, but am I close to the electricity grid as well? Because that's going to be basically where I get my fuel from today. So. And then there's the other end of this. People say, actually, I go from not really a set location, but I do lots of very long distant journeys. So I'm going to want that charging over the motorway network, over the strategic road network. But actually, there may be somewhere where I kind of want to go, not part of my business, but like a refueling stop. Is there like a recharging hub where I can bring my truck there? You could bring your truck there. And do you know what? We could even share that with other people. You could have cars charging there, so using the same electricity connection. You could share it with, I don't know, like buses or utility vehicles as well. So all these vehicles in the future are going to need charging up or refueling with hydrogen somewhere. So what are the petrol stations, if you like, of the future look like? Are there going to be hubs around where there is electricity infrastructure? So that's going to be your kind of place where it's going to be cheapest you get your energy, if that makes sense to us. Absolutely, there's going to be lots of different models there, from people that have that kind of home depot, home charging, and people that need that kind of en route charging or like destination charging where they get there. So it's going to be a kind of a full picture, a little bit like you have with cars.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's happening now in the car world, isn't it? I mean, I live in the northwest of England, and you know, we live very, very close to Charlotte Richard Services, and there's a Tesla charging station there, one junction down. I can't remember the name of the organisation that set it up. Literally just off the motorway network, but there's a very, very large sort of fuel station there, and they must have got, I bet they've put a dozen charging points in there. You know, we're about halfway between sort of London and Glasgow, and near Preston, it does seem to be sort of that would be the break point, wouldn't it? And it's happening now. I was staggered when I saw it the other week. I've not seen it before.
You are seeing that, and I think that's partly been driven by kind of government funding, government kind of ask there. So they have something that they call Project Rapid, and this is to kind of make sure that there is rapid electricity charging infrastructure across the motorway network. I think by 2023 they want at least 6 at every services. I think by 2035 they're looking for 6,000 across the entire network. So absolutely, those places you mentioned there are kind of halfway between places that people want to go. That's where you're going to see the infrastructure start to come in. And if you then think again into the future, like we said before, you're going to see trucks start to go along that. I'm sure that they pull in there, they need to stop, because one of the determining factors for a heavier vehicle isn't how far it's going, it's how far the driver can go. They have to stop after a certain amount of time as well. So you can know where these locations are. So you're going to see more and more people coming in and wanting to kind of recharge relatively quickly, because most people, when they pull into this, they want to go in, you want to stretch your legs, you've got to call the nature of whatever you want to do, pick up a coffee and a sandwich. How long is that going to take? That 15 minutes? Wouldn't it be great if your car was ready to go after that 15 minutes, rather than what you do now, if you've been out for an EV going, do you know, it's going to be half an hour, I've got another half an hour to kind of kill. So your stop is kind of dictated almost by human biology rather than the car. And that's absolutely the ambition that you want to get to.
And I suppose we're only really at the start of it, really. I mean, electric vehicle technology has been around for years and years and years. But in its sort of current guise, you know, we're talking about those sort of rapid recharging systems where, you know, we literally do call a nature, sandwich, apple, bottle of water, back to the car, back to the van, and away again, all within sort of 15, 20 minutes. And that may give us, I don't know, but you'll probably know the numbers a lot better than I do, Russell, but, you know, a certain amount of charging the battery to get to the destination. But we're not going to be too far away from, actually, within that 20 minutes, the thing being top to the brim and away we go again, are we?
Yeah, no, that, I mean, if you look where what they're at the moment, so the scheme I mentioned, kind of Project Rapid Forward, they're looking at 150 kilowatt as kind of minimum, and you are seeing 350 kilowatt charges there, and this will absolutely do it. In that 10, 15 minutes, that will pretty much take you from empty to as close as you can get to top in a battery there. So that's the way that you want to go. And you've seen the cars being developed that can take that there as well. So let's think into the future. Let's think into 2030 again. When you buy a new car in 2030, it will be able to charge at that rate quite comfortably, and that'll become the standard. So you'll just see a kind of creeping up there as well. And that will be what your charging experience will be like, rather than having to wait half an hour, 45 minutes of motorway services, you'll be able to do it quicker, arguably, than you can do everything else that you want to do. So you park in a little bit like you do a petrol station, put it in, go away, do what you need to do. Advantage over a petrol car, you have to, you know, when you fill up your car with petrol, you have to stand there kind of holding it. Yeah. And then you have to go back again. You don't have to, you plug it in, go away, sit inside in the warm if it's like to do that. So that's what you get to do. And again, to support that, you need the electricity infrastructure to get that. So you have a lot of these charges in a row, you really make sure you've got the power to them. And you need that power kind of ahead of the car. There's no point in everyone getting an electric car and then realizing, oh, we need to put the electricity infrastructure in. So it's really important, again, that we get that electricity infrastructure in ahead of need. So these charges can go on the end of that infrastructure as and when the cars come along, if that makes sense. So let's get the infrastructure in there, and then we can put the charge points on the end as the cars come along.
No, it's quite interesting you say that, because I mean, we speak to a lot of people more around the commercial vehicle sector, but where I live, my next door neighbour's just had one of these pod chargers put on the side of the house.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and they were, oh, we really wanted an electric vehicle, but we're a little bit, we didn't know how far we were going to be able to go in it. And, you know, so there's still bit of a pent up anticipation around it, isn't there, really? When, oh, but what happens if I want to go to my mum's and it, you know? And I think it's only a matter of time where the sort of confidence begin the marketplace, and then away it goes. But like a champagne cork leaving a bottle, really, won't it, I suppose?
I think it will. You mentioned confidence. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Your name, they need that confidence when they go, when they visit their mother, and they need to stop, they need to pull into services or wherever, that there's going to be an electric charging point there that charges their car in the time that they want to do it, is working, and it is reliable and just takes their car. Yeah, so that's a continuity point as well. I keep going back to petrol station. When you go anywhere in the country, you know there's going to be one there. I remember years ago, before we had kids, we drove up to Edinburgh. We live in the Midlands, drove to Edinburgh. I didn't do any research whether there was going to be a petrol station in Edinburgh. I was pretty confident there could be one somewhere. Didn't know exactly where. And I didn't have to do any research about how that petrol station worked, because it's exactly the same as every other petrol station anywhere else. So that's kind of what you need, confidence. So where you go, there's going to be EV charging, and it's going to be right for your kind of stopover. So if it's a quick one, it needs to be there in 15 minutes if you're just stopping over to call it nature, as we talked about before. Or actually, if you're parking somewhere for a couple of hours, like at the supermarket, it doesn't need to be that fast. It can kind of trickle charge your car out. And again, the continuity. So when you go in, you charge up, you've got the standardization. You can plug in, you can pay, and it's experience there. You don't have to have necessarily lots of apps, or you don't have to preloaded cards or anything like that. And I know that's slightly out of my area of expertise, but that is certainly being looked at, that kind of that standardization and that continuity of services, like in particular that contactless payment, so you can just put your card on there and then you're ready to go. So I think once you have confidence and continuity, then you can see that development there. And it's a big thing that word of mouth will start to develop as well. People will say, well, I got an electric car, I can do it. And then that feeds in, doesn't it? And then when you go on your journey, you see these EV charging sites being constructed, you go, well, that's interesting. That's giving me a bit more confidence there. So that's the kind of the momentum that you're seeing starting to shift behind electric vehicles now and the charge points behind them.
Russell, can we just have a quick look at the, or just talk over the numbers again? Because I think this is absolutely fascinating. I mean, from the date 2030, we'll just forget heavy trucks for the moment, but light vans and cars, where do you see this market's going to be in relationship to volume?
So we look at National Grid produces a kind of scenarios that look to the future of energy, and electric vehicles are kind of key to that. And they see kind of around 10, 11 million electric vehicles by 2030. So that's the numbers that you're looking at there. Now, lots of other people do lots of forecasts there. I saw a quite interesting one from the CCC, so the Committee on Climate Change that advised the government on what they should do. And they're looking at around 2040 by a full uptake of electric vehicles. So 10 years after your ban date, you can see all the cars, pretty much all the cars, there'll be a few people who'll keep classic cars, et cetera, but pretty much all your practical mileage being done in electric cars, that by 2040 as well. So if you get those numbers there, what are there, around 25, 30 million vehicles on the road?
That's right, yeah.
So that's what you're looking at the moment. Now, some people say you'll see a few less cars because more people work from home and more car sharing, but you're still comfortably 25, 30 million in that kind of range by 2040. And now, one of the things you always want to keep an eye on here is, when does that hockey stick start to go in? You've seen a slow, and I think you're starting to see it now. So if you saw the sales of electric vehicles last year, so remember, middle of the pandemic, load of car sales rooms were closed, very difficult to buy a car. 11% of vehicles sold were a plug-in electric car of some sort. And in the previous year, 2019, that was only 3%.
Yeah.
So you've seen a growth when broadly car sales have been down, and been down quite drastically. Mm. You've seen a growth in there as well. Imagine when you get your economic rebound, imagine what that's going to be like for electric cars as well. So I think you're on the start of that kind of really rapid growth.
Yeah.
And people have been predicting it for a while there. So that's a real big thing to keep out there. Some people look at forecasts and say there's not many electric cars at the moment. It's going to take ages for everyone to get them. But they forget that kind of exponential growth, that snowballing effect that we'll see you get there really quickly. So these numbers sound big and they sound far away, but it's very easy to get them. And I would caution that 2030 is not that far away, really. Nine years is no time, really.
Yeah, we've said before, I mean, on a podcast, really, 2030 is the end, isn't it? It's not the beginning of it all. That's where we've got to be by then, and I think people forget that. Russell, I was going to say, in relationship, I'm just trying to sort of visualise this. We're saying 11 million vehicles by 2030. From an infrastructure perspective, how many charging points does that represent? Because we've got the home charge, the work charge, and the network charge. If you say how many would you anticipate that being?
It's a good question. And I think you're right. You touched on the different types there of, well, how many charges do you need? So you had the home charges. So I think the general feel is most people at home like to charge their cars at home if they can. So either off the standard 3-pin or you want to get something installed there. So you think about where those 11 million goes and how many people have off-road parking. Now, the stats there, it's about 60%, 65% of people have access to off-road parking. So a lot of those people are going to want to put home charges in there as well. And then you've got the destination charges, and you've got to see them in supermarkets. Now, last time I went to the supermarket, they have EV chargers installed there. I think most supermarkets have them. I was actually just walking, I was walking to our local shops, and I've got a small car park next to them. I just saw an EV charging point going to be installed there. So these are coming, and they're coming quite quickly. And then you've got on the other side of it, they're kind of real rapid. So what are you going to see on the motorway, these really quick ones? There's some stats. Again, we look back at this and we see the publication. So again, we look at the Committee on Climate Change. They've got some really good numbers here. So today, for public charging, they see there's about 30,000 or so public chargers out there, maybe a little bit more now, kind of, you had something sort of, and they think there needs to be 300,000 by 2030, so you need 10 times as many as you've got out there. So you need a rapid uptake of kind of public chargers there. And it's the same for what you're seeing across the kind of rapid network as well. So it's probably about 6,000 or so kind of these rapid chargers you need by around 2030. So there's a big uptake in these as well. So it's really important that you get the energy infrastructure to support them as well. So that comes across all the network, right from National Grid at the top to make sure kind of motorway networks, you can have these really big, high volume fast chargers, and to your local grid to making sure that you can have one in your home or you can have one in your kind of supermarket there. So there's a lot of chargers to get in there. And again, a little bit like the uptake of cars, you've got to see a big ramp up of that. So they will start to ramp up quicker and quicker and quicker. And there's loads of firms out there that will put public chargers in there as well. So there's a real kind of liquid market there about people that will put these into your homes or into your offices, etc.
Well, you can imagine it, can't you? You know, places like, you know, when we do return a little bit more to normality, you know, places like some of the shopping centres and places where they want to attract, where I tell you what, we'll just nip to such and such. You know, it's almost an attraction, isn't it? We'll get the charge of the car whilst we go have a look, do some shopping.
Absolutely, it's real.
Or a meal, a restaurant, or anywhere like that.
Yeah, it's a good job. I can do my shopping, I can go for lunch, and do you know what? When I come back, my car's going to be kind of charged up. That's fantastic. You can't do that at the moment as well. That's a real nice extra advantage of having an electric car. You can go out, do what you need to do, charge up. So you very rarely sometimes you have to actually make a special journey to charge up your vehicle. But when you do need to make that special journey, that long journey to visit friends or go on holiday, you need to have confidence of that network there. So it's really important that we get that kind of rapid charging networking as well. So you can do both as well. So that's absolutely key.
Russell, it's been very, very encouraging. I mean, I suppose to any of the listeners that have a little bit dubious, you know, there are going to be decisions they need to make. Again, I'm talking purely around commercial vehicles that, you know, they're going to have to adapt and change and think about the whole sort of net zero world that we're rapidly moving towards. Russell, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. I'm hoping we can get together at the show, at the ITT Hub.
Looking forward to that.
Have a proper chat. I don't know if we'll be shaking hands or we'll be knuckle butt or elbow bump or whatever.
Whatever we can do. Really looking forward to that.
Really, great. Thank you very much for your time, giving us a great insight into where the future's going, and obviously, certainly myself, putting a lot of confidence into the grid and everything. You know, will be great when we get to 2030. Russell, thank you so much for your time, and we'll hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you.